This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. Think about the last time you worked in an organization where there was excitement in the air, where waking up in the morning wasn't such a drag and where everyone was pulling in the same direction. That indeed had to be an organization with a compelling company culture. Because the truth is, culture matters enormously. And many companies are starting to be aware of the importance of culture as a business driver. But when it comes to building it, it's useful to have a structured methodology to make it sustainable. So today we're speaking to Janet Lee, CEO and lead culture consultant of corporate culture consultancy 95%, and we're about to discuss what it takes to build culture in the workplace. Welcome back, Janet.
Hi, Frida. It's a pleasure to be back. Good morning, everyone.
It's been a while, and of course, you know, you're sniffling a little bit, but maybe we'll start from the beginning on what culture is, right? And it can be kind of vague for some people. When we think of a Malaysian culture, we think, oh yeah, we're very hospitable, we love our nasi lemak, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But what, in your definition, what is culture?
Culture is actually what happens every time a group of people get together. Hmm. The way that we interact with each other, the way that we do things, that's a culture. So yeah. You and your group of friends would have a certain culture. Every family would have their own culture. Various races would have their own culture. So similarly, when a group of people come together in a company, they would have a default culture. Hmm. Sometimes companies that are more aware would start to plan and design their culture rather than to let it be just a default culture.
Right.
The culture is how you interact with each other, how decisions are made, and culture is actually determined by what values that organization wants to uphold.
Mm. So it's not best to build it organically.
It's best to build it organically.
Okay, so it's not you can't sort of like, okay, we get together and then we sort of, the culture then comes about, but it'd be great if we could actually design it from the beginning.
Mm.
Right? And people realize. Now, I guess I want to know as well, when you don't have the right culture in an organization, what are the repercussions when there is, you know, when you're not moving the same, when you don't have the same culture?
Yeah. So when the culture in an organization is not optimal, what you'd get is that people would be less engaged, they would have less ownership, they'll come to work just to get a paycheck at the end of the month. Mm. So you're not going to get people driving. The company would have to spend a lot of time monitoring people and making sure, you need to put in systems and processes to make sure that people do their job. Mm. And people would, they would comply to keep their job. But in the long run...
And you comply, that's not a good word.
Yeah, that's not a good word. You'll get compliance, but you won't get drive.
Mm.
That's what happens when a company does not have a really strong culture.
Or a commitment,
that's right, or ownership. Mm. And in the long run, especially nowadays when there are so many millennials in the workforce, the millennials are not going to settle for a company that does not have a great culture. Mm. They're not going to be happy working in a company that does not have a clear sense of purpose and vision. Mm. And that's why they leave.
Yeah. Okay, so how have people interpreted the term culture wrongly?
I think a lot of companies, it's not that they've interpreted it wrongly, but perhaps the way that they go around it. I have come across a lot of companies that come up with their vision and mission statement. And the vision mission statement is usually about making profit or being at the leading edge of technology, which was fine in the technology age. But now, as we're moving to the age of consciousness, people are looking for something that is a bit more altruistic. Mm. So what is the purpose? What would the world miss if your company was not in existence anymore? So people are looking for a bigger meaning to work, especially the millennials, because they feel that work is actually part of their lifestyle.
Yeah.
It defines who they are.
It's an affinity.
Mm, that's right, an affinity. But what happens is that sometimes the company will come up with these statements, they'll put them up on the wall, they'll come up with a set of values. That's right. They don't live it. It's just words on the wall.
But even when you say it's millennials, right, even I think like at our age group, right, it matters.
It
matters the organization that we work with, what we're associated with. When people say, oh, Frida's from BFM, do I carry that with pride or don't I?
Mm, exactly.
Right? You know, so because, you know, that's a card you're carrying around. So let's talk a little bit about yourself, right? You know, course, long time in the advertising industry, and how you went to consulting and speaking events. And when we were here, we talked a little bit about training advertisers, mm-hmm. people yeah. in the advertising industry, right? What got you exposed to the idea of culture, and how did you develop it to become a passion of mm-hmm. yours?
And when we started 95%, we were training people for the advertising industry. And to be successful in advertising, you need to have the right mindset mm. as well as the skills. Then the people that we trained, when they went to work, their bosses realized that there was something a little bit different about them. How come their mindset is so positive? How come mm. they're so resilient? Mm. How come they keep bouncing back even after their work gets rejected a dozen times? Mm. So then there was one day, the CEO of an international ad agency met me at lunch, and he just threw me the question, do you know anyone who can do culture transformation? Hmm. Me, being a creative soul and a sucker for challenges, I just said, oh yeah, sure, we can do that. That was back in 2010.
Okay.
So we created a program for the whole company. It was so successful that this gentleman got promoted to a regional position. He then flew us to Indonesia to do the same thing for his Indonesian company, which we did. And then we realized that, hey, we've done it for two companies. I think we can start putting something together. And the work is so much more fulfilling because we're not just making a difference to one or two people mm. who come through our doors as students, but we're able to transform the whole company, and so many people's lives are affected. Mm. And today, my company's vision is to turn workplaces into joy places.
Workplaces into joy places. So it's moved beyond the advertising industry.
Mm.
Okay, so even how we can also evolve as a company and sort of change direction in that sense.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be able to make this transition so smoothly if I didn't have a decent culture in my own company.
Mm.
I say decent culture because I don't want to brag. Like, better find out from my people what they really think.
Mm.
But I do see that among my team, the way they have taken ownership of this transition from advertising to culture has been amazing.
Mm.
They make my life so much easier because they are actually driving it. They are constantly looking out for opportunities. They are constantly looking at how we can build our profile and how we can develop new tools, find new tools. They've taken on the initiative of reading and educating themselves on culture. So it's not me carrying the burden, it's not me pushing them, but everyone is driving together. And that's the benefit of a company that has got a strong culture.
A strong culture, strong positive culture, because
mm.
there's also strong negative culture,
yes.
right? I know I asked this a little earlier, but maybe, when we talk about the challenges faced by firms or companies or any form of institutions when it comes to culture, what do you normally look out for? I mean, is it high turnover? That sort of, those are the telltale signs that,
yeah.
that there are no. What are the other yeah. telltale signs?
High turnover is definitely mm-hmm. one. A low level of performance, low level of ownership.
Mm.
That if you don't ask people to do something, they won't do it. If you ask them to do it, they'll comply.
They'll comply.
Mm.
Right. And sometimes people say, "Oh, we're going through a restructuring." That doesn't solve the problem.
Well, it may,
okay.
Depending on what purpose the restructuring is meant to serve. It is about smoothening out processes, making workload a bit more efficient. That can help tremendously as well. See, the challenge of changing your culture or enhancing your culture is that culture is made up of many moving parts.
Mm.
It's not just the vision and values that you put on the wall, but it's how you interact with each other. It involves the entire environment. What are your systems and processes? What are the policies that you have in place? So sometimes trying to change culture can be so difficult because there are so many different parts that you need to handle
mm.
at the same time. It's almost like you're trying to change the tires of a car while mm. the car is moving.
Mm-hmm.
So it really needs to be broken down and done piecemeal, one part at a time,
mm.
so that every small part can then build up to the bigger whole.
Okay, so it may be, let's just look at, for example, let's just look at the enterprise team. You know what I mean? So that's how it is. You can't try to look at this as a whole, but look at it piece by piece, and try to get
and
that
then put it all together
again, right? Okay, how? So I guess, like you were saying, if a company looks at it and say there's something wrong, there are too many people leaving, there's something. And how about when you see an organization that was doing well,
mm-hmm.
and then after that not doing as well? What could have happened along the way with the culture?
It could have been any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would recommend is, instead of just jumping the gun and pointing to one or two things, there are plenty of diagnostic tools in the market.
Mm.
One that we use is called, is from the UK-based Barrett Value Centre. It's called the Cultural Transformation Tool. Tools like that can be very useful to help CEOs pinpoint what exactly is the mismatch.
Ah, so there are now tools that are you can actually measure what's okay. Well, I want to find out a little bit more about that tool from the Barrett Value Centre in just a moment. I'm here with Janet Lee from 95% talking about culture, methodologies to avoid mediocrities. You're listening to Enterprise. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning, Frida Liu here. I've got Janet Lee from 95% talking about culture, methodologies to avoid mediocrities. And we were talking earlier on about how culture has an impact on productivity, on how a team works together, whether people are leaving the organization. And of course, you know, you talk about how now culture can be measured. This is the partnership that you have with Barrett Value Centre out in the UK. But when we talk about culture, I know that you actually had a chat with Malik, our boss, about this. So yes, what did he say was the culture at BFM? Spill the beans.
Yes, I actually had the privilege of interviewing Malik for my book. I'm trying to write a book on culture. And he described the four pillars that shape the BFM culture. Number one, it's entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's open. Number three, anti-hierarchical. Mm-hmm. And number four, listener-centric. Mm-hmm. So I guess I should be asking you, is that true?
Not bad. Okay, so and when he says, okay, so I mean, I guess this is just an example. How does then that translate into productivity? You know, so when you have these, so it can be very, when you say all these things, it's not positive or negative, right? It can be in one direction, another direction. How do you then turn those culture into something positive?
Okay, as an example, the open culture, there are no walls. People sit in groups, like cell groups. Yeah. So what Malik said is that
there's very, over my shoulders.
There's very quick flow of information. Mm. So because people are not in different units here and there, the information flow within the cell is actually very fast, and that helps problems get escalated so that they can be addressed. Issues are raised very quickly, and whatever instructions that go out, the whole team is kept informed. Right. So that's a very simple example of how having an open culture produces productivity.
Okay. So how would you connect culture to values?
The values would define the company's culture.
Right.
So like for 95%, our values are love, truth, courage, and winning. Mm. So in everything that we do, we're always asking ourselves, where are we coming from with this? Mm. The value of love is spelled out into behaviors like having the best interest, having the other person's best interest at our heart. Mm. So regardless of whether we're talking to each other or talking to our clients or associates, we're always asking ourselves, okay, is it a win for that person or not? Mm. It can't just be a win for us. It also has to be a win for that person. So values would determine how you want to interact with each other. It would also determine how decisions are made, and that's what shapes and forms your culture.
Are there examples when you talk about these values like love and all that, right, where you've refused a client because you don't think you're able to impart those values with these clients?
It's not about imparting our values to the clients. The values, it's who we are. Mm-hmm. It defines who we are. Mm. We're not here to impose it on other people.
Right.
The times when we decline clients, it's when we feel that we are not able to be of service to them.
Okay.
That maybe what they require is not what we can provide right now.
Mm-hmm. Does it go back to your values and culture because of what you're not able to provide them? Or is it just pure services that you're...
Yeah, because if we can't make it a win for them, then why would we want to go into it?
Okay. Rather than trying to find something, if it's not aligned with who your organization is and culture is, then you're not able to provide the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they're not able to provide the best, then it's not a win for them. They might as well go look for someone who can actually provide what they really need.
Right. Because that's where you come from. Because sometimes, you know, I'm just thinking like, you know, maybe with certain organizations, okay, we know that we don't think it, your company is of integrity and it doesn't come back to who we are, so we don't want to work with you. I mean, do these thoughts actually crop in your mind?
Well, we haven't We haven't come across companies
like that
are so conflicting.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like attracts like.
Yeah.
So usually, well, most of our clients so far have been really quite amazing people that we feel very privileged to be able to work with them.
Mm, okay. Now, you've tied up with the Barrett Value Centre in the UK, BVC. Tell us a little bit about this partnership and why you've partnered with them.
Well, I met Joanna Barclay, who taught me the tools a couple of years ago. And we were looking for some way to measure values, because values is something which is so intangible.
Yeah.
How do you measure the
love?
How do you measure how much love
I'm
there
giving
is,
you 60% love only.
So when I came across this tool created by Richard Barrett, I was quite amazed. He's an engineer, and he has actually studied all the top 100 values, and he's plotted it on a grid called the 7 levels of consciousness. And this 7 levels of consciousness is based on Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And the thinking is that our basic needs must be fulfilled. If not, people are going to feel very anxious and depressed. But even when you fulfill the basic needs, like the need for security, for finance, even when those needs are fulfilled, it doesn't mean that people are happy. Mm. It just means that they're not anxious or depressed, but they could still be unhappy unless you fulfill their higher needs.
Mm.
And the way society has evolved, we're now in the age of consciousness where people are looking for meaning.
Hmm.
We all want to do something that has a specific purpose.
Hmm.
So even more important that, you know, just getting a paycheck at the end of the month is not going to satisfy us at a deeper level anymore.
Hmm. Okay. Now, when you look at culture for Malaysian companies, right, how relevant is it for us? And do you see common trends or common traits among Malaysian companies?
Yeah. One thing about Malaysian companies, and I think this is something very true of all Malaysians, is that we don't speak up very much.
Mm.
From young, we're conditioned to keep quiet, don't ask so much. So when we go to work, that's the default culture. Don't speak up. If you ask your boss, if you question your boss, it can be interpreted as being disrespectful. So if you don't agree with your boss, keep quiet. Talk in the coffee shop. If you're not happy, okay, go and talk in the lift lobby when you're having a smoke. So there's a lot of passive resistance. And in a traditional company, typical Malaysian company, you would find that people would be doing what they need to do, but sometimes they could be just doing the minimum to get by.
Yeah,
there's this
bare minimum.
There's this piece of research done by Gallup, the state of the global workplace, and they found that on the average, there's only 13% engagement among employees surveyed internationally. 13% of people are engaged. The rest are either disengaged or actively disengaged.
That's 87%.
Yeah. So if you go into any typical company, you find that people will clock in, do what they need to do, have a break, and then at the end of the day, they clock out, and that's it. So there's a very low level of engagement. They're not really pushing and driving. And that can make all the difference to a company. Because if you want a company to perform, you can't have people who are just doing the minimum to get by. You want people to go above and beyond. And to do that, you really need to engage them. And to get people fully engaged, it comes back to what's the culture like.
Yeah, and you were talking about how, you know, we're taught to respect, right? And then when we go to the mamak shop or the staircase to talk, that's not respect. You know, when we're talking behind the back, that's already is not respect. Just because I don't speak it in your face, but I say it behind your back, it's even more disrespectful.
It is.
Right?
It really is.
Do you think we can ever get past that, you know, that culture that's so, you know, pervasive among Malaysians?
It can. Mm. It can. But it has to start from the top. The CEO has to be open enough to want it.
Mm.
And then we can guide the CEO to create the environment in which people can actually speak up honestly and openly.
Mm.
An environment of feedback. We're recently doing a project for a government-owned company.
Mm.
So you can imagine a government-owned company, people don't speak up very much.
Mm.
But one of their values was honesty, and they wanted to have an open culture. So we actually spent a year just teaching everyone to give and receive feedback.
Mm.
we started the coaching program for the leadership team. So the entire management team went through this. And in that program, they learned how to give and receive feedback. Mm. They learned how to give empowering appraisals. Mm. They learn how to create a space to just listen to people so that people won't feel too intimidated about speaking up.
Mm.
So change can happen.
Okay. And when you work 1 year with them, right, what were the results? Did we see 100% increase in productivity? Or, I mean, how do you then measure its success?
Well, the way that they're looking to measure it is through employee engagement surveys, which the results have not been in yet.
Mm.
But what has happened a couple of weeks ago, excuse me, the company went through a rather exciting time.
Mm.
I can't reveal too much.
Okay.
But the company went through a rather exciting time. They called it a crisis.
Uh-huh.
And what they said was that, wow, now we know our culture has transformed because we rode through the crisis very, very smoothly.
Okay.
Previously, the various departments would be feuding, but now everyone is working together seamlessly.
Right.
So we know our culture has changed.
Right.
That was what our client told us.
Okay, so it doesn't stop the crisis from happening, but it just how you react to it or how you respond to it has changed. Okay, so that sometimes it's very intangible, but I can imagine how if it's not handled well, the crisis will even be worse.
That's right.
So when you actually go down, you go through this tool with a company, how long does that process take? You know, identifying the 100 values and then what is them? How long does that process take?
The Barris tool takes about 5 to 6 weeks to set up the survey and then to analyze the results and produce a report. The report is presented in a 1 or 2 day workshop where we would work with the management team to understand the results and to figure out what led to it so that we can come up with some action plans.
Okay, so that's also important, finding out the root cause, right? And so this is the CTT, the Cultural Transformation
Tools.
That's
right.
Okay, so from there, then you identify
what the issues are,
and then what do you do then? It's workshopped, it's coaching, it's all these tools.
It's a combination of a whole lot of different things, depending on what problem is brought up. And it could be any number of things. It could be sometimes just a small tweak, or it could be really coaching. We do coaching when we need to create a behavior change or when we need people to learn new skills. There's something that you can't do in a 1-2 day workshop.
Right.
It has to be at least 3-4 months so that we're there to guide people to make that change. Sometimes it could be recommending to the client that you need to review your performance management system because there's just too much room for people to hide, and that's why they're not stepping up.
Okay.
So it could be any number of things.
Right, and it'll take time to change and evolve.
It does.
And they do realize that.
It does. So usually our engagement is 1, 2, 3 years because it does take that much time for the company to totally transform.
Because Rome wasn't built overnight, both ways, right?
Right?
I mean, the bad behavior didn't start overnight, and of course, that will also take time to change.
Absolutely.
And so I know you also have a couple of programs, and this is all, I guess, part of the culture enhancement program. There's the power of me, from me to we, and what sparks?
That's also a type of empowerment program.
Mm.
So when we roll out the culture, what we do is usually a couple of creation sessions with the CEO, COO, CMO, CFO sometimes. And then after that, we run a cascade where we involve the rest of the management team in creating the program. So then the entire management team feels that they have ownership of it.
Mm.
After that, we would equip the leaders. Because the leaders need to be role models, they need to walk the talk before you can expect anyone else to follow.
Right.
So after we've done that, then only we will start to cascade it down to the rest of the company.
Hmm.
Once we've done the cascade, if the company feels that their people need some empowerment, that's where we would bring in programs like the Power of Me or Sparks, and the different names for different types of programs.
Right.
Sometimes we would do coaching programs for the culture champions. As well as skills. And some of the skills trainings that we do, they're very basic skills, but somehow they are often overlooked. It's skills like, how do you hold an inspiring meeting?
Mm.
How do you conduct an empowering staff appraisal?
An inspiring meeting is short.
And purposeful. How do you tell a story? How do you tell your own culture, heroic culture stories? So these are some of the skills that we do as well.
All right. I'm here with Janet Lee from 95% talking about culture methodologies to avoid mediocrities. I'll want to find out a little bit more. I'm sure all your clients will be asking, how much, ah? After this, you're listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Boleh for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. I'm Frida Liu. I'm here with Janet Lee from 95% talking about culture, methodologies to avoid mediocrities. And of course, we're discussing how culture does have a major impact on productivity and how they've tied up with BVC, Barrett Value Center, and how you can measure culture and how it is a process, right, to change the culture or to enhance the culture, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of people will then say, this process, how much does it cost?
Okay. Everything that we do is highly customized, and every company is different, so they would require different things. So the fee would range tremendously, depending on whether they just need a small booster, a quick fix, or whether they're really looking at a long-term engagement.
Fortunately or unfortunately, most of them only come to you for culture when problem has arisen. Is that the case?
Not really.
No,
there are a couple of SMEs who are very far-sighted, and they've been doing a lot of good things on their own, and they just want to take it to the next level.
To make sure that they're on track. Okay. Are there examples? I mean, of course, you don't have to mention a name, but like examples of particular industries that were already doing well, and what were the enhancements made?
Okay, there's this company that has been doing very well. However, the business driver was the managing director. The sole business driver is the managing director. And one of the things that we shared with them, because they were saying, how can we get our people to be more engaged? How can we get our people to have greater ownership? And I said, well, maybe you can share the load with them, share the company's goals with them, share the business targets with them, and let everyone know what each other is doing, and give them that ownership and accountability to be the business driver in addition to you. So you're not doing it alone.
Which is very scary, because if anything happens to the managing director, everything will fall to pieces.
Yeah. So it was high time for that burden to actually be shared out with among the senior team.
Okay.
And when the managing director did it, it was scary because it has never been done before. But when she did it, she opened up, she spoke very passionately to everyone and got everyone on board. What happened was that within 9 months, they had already achieved their 1 year's target.
Wow. Okay. They measure in terms of revenues in that sense.
Yeah.
And that's also the case, right? When everything just sits on one person, and it's great if you're around, but when you're not around, that's the real determinant of how the culture can be. So just looking at it before a problem arises, let's sort of look at how we can actually spread the load. And the culture sometimes is not just one person. It is the organization.
It's the entire organization.
Okay, so now I guess just what happens then? Like, I guess this is a good example. Sometimes what you start off with, your objectives, your challenges, right? It can also change and shift, right? So do you then sit with the organization to continue to innovate and to grow? Or they just say, okay, look at it one time, gao tim, you know, in this case already, then end of problem. Or what happens that we're always on top of things?
Yeah. The backbone of our culture transformation programs are monthly consultation sessions. And that goes on for 1, 2, 3 years. What happens in those consultation sessions is where we touch base with the client to find out what has been happening in the past, what is the situation now, so that we can have finger on the pulse. And also, based on what's showing up now, what do we need to do next? So that needs to constantly happen, because culture is a living thing. It's very dynamic. Sometimes they may try to implement something and it doesn't work. So there may be some teething problems. So we're there to guide them, coach them along, so that things can actually be implemented and installed.
Now, when you look at organizations, obviously you have a mix of large companies and also SMEs. Is there anything that you particularly like, enjoy working on?
I love seeing the transformation in people.
Yeah.
I love it when people suddenly realize that they are capable of doing so much more, mm-hmm. and they start believing in themselves, and they start going out to create things which are magical.
Mm.
So that's the part that I like, to see people get switched on.
Mm. So, and that, of course, regardless of whether they come from an SME
or an MNC or an GOC, that happens. That always happens in our programs.
When you see the eyes light up,
yeah,
that's a job satisfaction. Thanks for being with us, sharing this very interesting topic on culture. I was speaking to Janet Lee from 95%. You've been listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.